Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 15th of January. Our guest this hour is the co-author of an important book, Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying and Make Kindness Go Viral. Professor Justin Patchen says that he and his co-author wrote the book for this reason. They heard stories from teens who have been cyberbullied, and it made them sad and also made them very mad. Sad because someone has been hurt by the carelessness and cruelty of others, and still mad because it still happens so often. The authors say we do not accept the idea about bullying that says it's always going to exist because it always has. Personally, we think that defense is a cop-out, and our view isn't based on the idealistic hope that one day everyone will hold hands and sing folk songs together. Justin Patchen, co-author of the book, he is a professor of criminal justice in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, also co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. He is author of Bullying Beyond the Schoolyard, Cyberbullying Prevention and Response, and School Climate 2.0. He's been studying teen use and misuse of technology for 10 years. The book is for middle and high school students, and it speaks directly to that group of people, and perhaps is one of the first books to do just that. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm amazed whenever we do a show on bullying how people remember with great detail a bullying incident that may have happened to them some 30 years ago that it's still right there in the mind's eye and still hurts. We welcome phone calls for Justin. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Justin Patchen, thank you very much for being with us. Whoops, we got a little bit. Hello? I'm sorry. We'll just have to try and reach him in some other fashion. Maybe a phone call. We're just getting a lot of feedback, as you can tell. And as I was saying, it's an important book. I love the part of the book, and even the authors say at the beginning of the book, that this idea about spreading kindness may be one of the most important themes, and it's the part of the book that I went to immediately to find out about these kindness campaigns. What better way to counter bullying than to look at a campaign that stands up to bullying by saying really kind things about people. And it's been incredibly effective. They include some stories about schools in Minnesota and, of course, in Wisconsin. But they also include the devastating effects of bullying on students from all over the country. But there are very specific ways to counter this, and this book is filled with advice on how to do just that, how definition of what this bullying is, how it is accomplished, what makes people do this, but most importantly, how to stand up to it, because a lot of people just remain pretty darn silent in the face of this. It speaks directly to tweens and teens who have been cyberbullied or who are tired, sick and tired of seeing others being bullied. They say that a lot has been published to help parents, but there really haven't been very many resources for teens. So this gives teens the tools and strategies that they can easily use and empower them to delete cyberbullying and make kindness go viral. And we will welcome phone calls, I'm sure, that we'll get, because I think this is a fairly prevalent problem. We will hear from quite a few of you during the course of this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to join us that way, you are certainly welcome to do so, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also, I forget to say this because I don't use it that extensively. I mean, I use it every day, but I just forget to say it, is Twitter, at K Dunn Show. And I think we're all set now. Professor Justin Patchen with us now? Oh. Justin? Hello. No, not yet. Well, we'll get him here in a moment. Just to let you know what's coming up, tomorrow we're going to be talking about, hold on a second, just luckily I had tomorrow's papers here. Tomorrow we'll speak about the dark side of emotional intelligence, an article that was in The Atlantic. And it's an interesting take on this. So that will be the author of the article, The Dark Side of Emotional Intelligence, at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And at 1 o'clock, we like to do history shows pretty frequently. The author of The Great Debate, Edmund Burke, Thomas Paine, and the Birth of Right and Left. Of course, the gap between the political left and right is pretty wide right now, and we'll be looking at Burke and Paine, who are guest says were utterly fascinating and divisive figures, both active in politics, versed in philosophy, and two of the most effective and powerful political writers in the history of the English-speaking world. So that's tomorrow at 1 o'clock. All right, let's try this again. Professor Justin Patchen, are you there now?
Kathleen.
Oh, hi.
Hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Glad to be with you.
Yes, thank you so much. It took a while, but here we are.
Yeah,
well, before we talk about kindness, which I want to get to fairly soon because I love that part of your book, but you know, it's interesting that you cite statistics of the number of people who do bullying, and it isn't the vast majority of young people who are doing this, but there must be a whole lot of people who just don't know what to do about it or just don't say anything.
That's true. You know, that was one of the messages we wanted to try to convey with this book, and we do a lot with our presentations. And, you know, the fact is the minority of teens are involved in these negative behaviors, but it does affect a good deal of people. And, you know, we see the behaviors of these kids, and then we assume that everybody must be doing it. And so we want to basically convey the message that, you know, stand with the majority and don't be mean to others online. And so even though it's happening and it's affecting a sizable number of teens, it's basically a small number that's sort of wreaking the most havoc.
Right. And what are the forms of cyberbullying?
Well, that's, you know, we've been studying this for over 10 years, and it constantly changes. And basically, you know, we define cyberbullying as, formally, as willful and repeated harm inflicted through the use of computers, cell phones, or other electronic devices. So basically, it's using technology to harass, to humiliate, to threaten, to tease. And the forms or types are just as varied as the technologies. And a lot of times people ask me, well, where's the most cyberbullying happening these days? And you really look at, you know, what are the most popular technologies of the day, and that's where you're going to see the most cyberbullying, because that's where kids are hanging out, and oftentimes you've got kids who are misusing those technologies.
And Professor Patchen, does it behoove us well to study why this even happens? I just don't quite get it. I don't know why anybody would want to be so cruel.
Well, yeah, how long's your show? Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of varied reasons for why certain people do it. Now, when we talk with teens, the two most common reasons that they give us for why they've cyberbullied others are, the first is revenge. So they did it because the other person did something to them first, and so they feel justified in saying something mean, and they can sort of go back and forth on that. The other one is kind of interesting. The other most common response is they just think it's funny. They just think they're having a joke. It's just a laugh. Why are you making such a big deal out of this? And I really do believe for a lot of the young people who tell us that they just don't understand the harm that it causes, and maybe they really didn't intend to cause harm, but what they said or how they said it or where they said it really did result in harm towards another person. So that's why education is so important, and that's why, you know, we devote a whole chapter in the book to talking with teens who are thinking about, you know, mistreating somebody online, or basically to get them to think about the potential consequences of that. And even if they just think they're joking around, it really could hurt someone's feelings pretty significantly.
And you talk to so many teens from all over the country who, in so many cases, were hurt very badly. There are many who consider committing suicide over this, and some have. This can be incredibly serious.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I've early on when we started studying these issues, all too often we heard the response more from adults than teens, but in some cases from both, that, you know, what's the big deal? It's just words, right? It's just text on a screen. This isn't like you're being physically hurt, but, you know, as the book outlines and as we've, you know, come to learn in our research and our conversations with others, that, you know, words do wound, and they can have significant implications in the emotional and psychological well-being of individuals.
How? What are the tools that young people need to have to protect themselves?
Well, I think it's the main tool is knowledge of sort of who they can turn to if they run into a problem that they can't handle themselves. So, of course, our book was primarily written to give teens some suggestions for just sort of basic, it's a basic toolkit in terms of things they can consider using, blocking a user, recording evidence, some general information like potentially laughing it off and potentially ignoring the person who's doing it. And the thing is, all of these, or maybe to say it another way, none of these are going to work in every single situation. And so it's up to the teen to sort of evaluate the different strategies that we outline and see what might work in a particular situation with a particular person, but then also to kind of prepare themselves for the kind of situation where they might need to get assistance from an adult and to enlist the assistance of an adult that they can trust. So, for example, when we talk with teens, a lot of times they are reluctant to tell their parents about these kinds of experiences because they're afraid, you know, mom or dad is going to respond to an incident of cyberbullying on Facebook by simply telling them to get off Facebook,
right,
or, you know, take away their cell phone, and then the cyberbullying will disappear. But, of course, that's not true. So we say, okay, maybe you don't feel comfortable telling mom and dad. Find another adult you trust, maybe an adult at school, a counselor, a principal, a teacher, a coach, a faith leader. Find somebody who, you know, understands the circumstances, understands the relationship, and can help you resolve this situation. So I think we've long been advocating that responding to cyberbullying can't just be put on the shoulders of parents, can't just be the responsibility of teachers. It really takes a coordinated community response, and teens need to be a part of that solution too. And so that's the primary purpose for writing this book.
Mm-hmm. And as much as you may want to just get rid of all of those derogatory comments, hateful comments, you also point out that it may be important to keep a record of this, not only a diary, but keep an actual record of that which is on the computer so people will know that it's real.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one of the defining characteristics of cyberbullying is that by definition, there's always evidence. And if somebody said something mean to me or you when we were growing up and we relayed that conversation to another, it might have been filtered a little bit. We might have remembered it a little bit differently, or the person, you know, hearing our concern might think that we're exaggerating or, you know, we're putting words in the other person's mouth. And it's a lot easier for adults who are trying to help in these kinds of situations to see exactly what was being said and the context within which it was being said in terms of trying to come up with a solution. So, you know, keeping that evidence, you know, the two most common sort of gut urges for teens when they're being cyberbullied are the two worst things they can do. The first thing is to delete it, to delete the evidence, and the second thing is to retaliate, to respond. And these are the things that are kind of the primal urges, but yet they're the worst things they can do. So if you do anything, if any of the listeners do anything to educate their kids about this topic, it's just don't respond, don't retaliate, and keep the evidence.
And really, do most young people respond to the bullying?
A lot of them do.
They
right?
do.
Yeah, they just feel like they need to stand up for themselves. They feel like they, you know, have to save face, especially when it's happening in a public venue, right? On a Facebook page that, if not public, is certainly being monitored by their friends. And so it's basically they're being publicly humiliated. And so they have to do something, right?
Right.
And, of course, it's not a good idea
right.
to do that.
And the problem with it is it can get to a point where thousands of people can see this horrible post.
Exactly. And along with that, it's sort of the idea that a lot of those are friends, people from the student's school. So even if the 1,000 people or 10,000 people that see the post are complete strangers, the perception among targets of these kinds of behaviors is that everybody at their school is in on this joke. Everybody's seen it. Everybody's a part of it. Nobody wants to help.
Yes.
And so they just feel completely isolated and alone.
Right. Well, let's talk about those people who may want to help, those people who are bystanders in cyberbullying situations. One of the young people, and you interview many of them for this book, Kylie from Colorado, said that as a bystander, you play a crucial role. It may be easier to ignore the situation, but you have to acknowledge it and take action, both in an attempt to solve the current issue and to prevent future situations from arising. So do you agree with her? What do you say to bystanders?
Absolutely. You know, and I believe that most teens want to do something when they see it. you know, there's a small minority of those who would bully, and there's, you know, maybe a small minority of those who don't care or who are apathetic, but I think there's a large minority of those who would love to do something if they knew what to do and knew how to interact. They don't want to necessarily and shouldn't be asked to put themselves in harm's way, so I wouldn't ask, you know, a teen to jump in the middle of a physical fight necessarily. But there are a lot of things that they can do. And, you know, Kylie's great. I mean, she actually graduated from Arapahoe High School in Colorado, and you might recall there was a school shooting there about a month ago.
Yes.
And she really helped us a lot with this book and giving her perspective, and she's been involved in a lot of the high-tech, you know, kind of activities of students in her school district. And so she's dead right. I mean, she sort of represents the common voice that they're looking for things that they can do, and she's really trying to encourage her peers to stand up and stand for what's right.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls. We're going to move into a conversation of making kindness go viral, which I think is good, really good. Why not use the power of technology to do some good? And students who have done that in various parts of the country, including Wisconsin and Minnesota. Our guest this hour is Justin Patchell. He is the co-author of Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral. He's a professor of criminal justice at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and has presented in the White House, has appeared on all national news outlets, and he's written a couple of other books as well and has been studying teen use and misuse of technology for about 10 years. Here's our phone number. I'm sure that many of you listening have examples of cyberbullying that's either something that has affected you or perhaps it's affected your child or one of your students. And it can be incredibly devastating. If you want to talk about how it's had an impact on your life, why people are bystanders, what they're afraid of, and how it can be countered, and how the you have to be careful about using what you post. Not only should you not bully people, but you need to be careful in how you respond and in what you post yourself. So we'll go to your phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number for you to join the conversation with Justin Patchell, co-author of Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Jeff in Janesville is our first caller for you. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I was wondering, because I'm currently a student right now. I'm a non-traditional student, but I've noticed just in the time I've been in school from previously as well as now being a non-traditional student, some of the cyberbullying is that I've I was wondering, is it still just as high in the first couple of years of college as it would be in the latter years of high school, seeing that they're about the same, you know, age, same cohorts?
Yeah, actually, we've collected a little bit of data on that, not much. We do know that in our work with middle and high school students and some elementary students that among sort of school-aged teens, the behaviors tend to peak in middle school, but it's still, you know, the stuff still occurs with frequency in high school and among college students and adults, you know, later after college as well. And in fact, I was contacted twice this morning you know, about incidents involving adults and workplace bullying. And so I think it is a good point to recognize that this just isn't a teen problem. Adults are experiencing these things and are perpetrating these things on a regular basis as well. So we can't just blame teens for the bullying problem.
Right. Well, and I know for myself, I go to UW-South for Human Development and Family Studies. And one of the things that I was reading in books, child development, middle child development class I have. And it was talking about bullying and cyberbullying and, you know, bullying as, you know, it was in the old days back in school and kids and, you know, that, you know, taking someone's, you know, clothes out of their locker, you know, gym locker and stomping on them or, you know, things like that of that nature. And I was just wondering, you know, how is that being seen? So,
yeah, actually, raises another interesting point that, you know, over the last probably 20 to 30 years, bullying at school or sort of face-to-face bullying has gone down, and it's or been stable in the last maybe 5 to 10 years, but it's gone down. Cyberbullying has increased a little bit, you know, especially if you control for access to technology. It hasn't spiked in the last, 5 years or so in a way that you would think based on all the stories we're hearing. But it's also important to point out that in all of our research and all the research that I've looked at that others have done, bullying still happens more frequently at school than it does online. And so significantly more. And so it's kind of interesting. We would think that cyberbullying has to be the bigger problem here today, but it's really not. It still happens more frequently at school. The other sort of interesting point, though, is those who are bullied at school are often bullied online, and those who bully at school often bully online. So it's often the same kids in the different contexts.
Is it a whole lot easier to just do it anonymously, which I assume, maybe I'm wrong, would be the way people go about this online?
It is, of course, easier to do it anonymously, but, surprisingly, we do see a lot of examples of, at least with teens, of them using their real Facebook accounts or Twitter accounts to say mean or hurtful things. And in our research, the vast majority of the teens who are being cyberbullied know, or at least think they know, who is doing the cyberbullying. And so 85% of the time, it's somebody from their social circle, a former friend, a former romantic partner, or the new romantic partner of the former romantic partner, right? So there's almost always that connection. So even though, of course, they can be anonymous, and many times they are, just as many times maybe they're not, because, they're not afraid. They don't think that right. What they're doing is that wrong, is that bad. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jeff, for your call. Greg in Stevens Point, hello.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. Nice show. Yeah, I just think he's wasting his time. I really do in our society today. I came home early last night and worked second shift, and my wife had on an entertainment show at the 10:30 time slot, and they were bashing that governor out in New Jersey for his weight. I mean, it wasn't even funny. I'm not a fan of this guy or nothing like that, but you see that constantly. You see it on Saturday Night Live. You see it on Fox with the way they treat Mrs. Clinton and anybody like that, and it's like, it just until society gets past this that type of thing, I think he's just wasting his time. I really do.
Well, I hope I'm not wasting my time, Greg. I appreciate the concern. I also my goal here, especially with this book, and is to try to maybe I'm idealistic, but hopefully can move towards a society where that isn't as prevalent. Because I agree 100% that there's a lot of what could be easily defined as bullying happening among adults in a public realm, and we're mistreating each other. And, again, maybe I'm idealistic, but if we can sort of teach kids to value each other, to respect each other, to promote kindness, maybe they'll do that when they get older as adults as well. I hope that's what will happen.
Well, and there's kind of a fine line. It's not like we want to eliminate in our society friendly poking fun at somebody, including poking fun at ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely not. I agree. And that's sort of an important distinction, too, because a lot of times I'll talk with people and, even best friends will rib each other or say things that an outsider might perceive to be hurtful or harassing. And it all depends on the context. It depends on the nature of the relationship. It depends on how it made that person feel. In addition to not wanting to completely eliminate that, I think there is a place for public critique, especially of public officials. And the question is, can we do that in a respectful way? In a way that doesn't result in a personal attack on somebody. And I think that's what we need to work harder towards.
Well, what about Greg's point, coming home to see Chris Christie being poked fun at? Well, he's got a lot of other troubles at the moment, but being poked fun at because of his weight. Is that cruel? Does that cross the line?
I think it crosses the line because, again, it's a personal attack. Whether or not you agree or disagree with his decisions regarding the bridge and political decisions, I, of course, think that there should be public discourse about those kinds of issues. But if to the extent that you're criticizing his weight or threatening him personally or threatening his family, which has happened, or any public official, I think that crosses the line. And kids are watching and they're paying attention. And so Greg is right to be concerned if our kids are watching these shows where adults are attacking others personally and think it's okay, then that's what they're going to learn to do.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg, so much for calling. Chris in Wisconsin Dells.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been the victim of a case of bullying at the very, very highest levels of the state of Wisconsin. And as a matter of fact, Kathleen, your employer is involved in this situation, but you can just jump out of the conversation and say, I don't have any contact with these people. I got a letter from UWM Chief Legal Counsel telling me that I was not allowed, upon pain of threatened legal action, to tell anybody, including like the people of the state or the people of the country, that what happened to me, which was that they used the full powers of the state of Wisconsin to take my home away from me and my stuff away from me and drive me into a black hole. And now they're telling me that I can't do that. And then they took the powers of the state to use the Madison SWAT team to try and put me in prison. I'm not making this up, honest to God, I'm not making this up, because I filed a civil rights complaint against employees of the state. And until the point I'm making is that until the people at the top levels of power in our society say, this is not an okay thing to do, we can't do this to people, the children in the society are not going to learn that it's not okay.
Thank you, Chris, for the call. Obviously, we don't have the full story from you, nor do we really have time to hear all of that right now. But let's take on the possibility of institutional bullying. Is there such a thing, Professor Patchen?
Well, of course. I mean, and again, you're exactly right in trying to understand the whole picture. This is complicated for parents and educators who are confronted with a bullying and cyberbullying incident, because oftentimes they're only getting one side of the story. And, Chris might be 100% correct. But, you know, when you're trying to resolve a particular situation, especially when it involves adults, it can be tricky. And, you know, one of the sort of defining characteristics of bullying in general is there's a power differential. And when you have that power differential, that can make it very difficult to sort of figure out what's exactly happening and how it's affecting people. So it is a challenge for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris, very much for the call. Lines are open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655 is the number. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at KDunnShow. I was wondering, as I was reading some of the kindness, and let's move into kindness now because it's such a terrific part of the book, but I was interested in some of the bystanders who became people who were active in countering bullying. The stories they were telling were bullying against people who were weaker in some way or perceived as weaker. They may have had a developmental disability. They may be considered an other in some way. Are those the most likely targets of bullying, those who others perceive as others, not as smart, not as pretty, different race, whatever?
Yeah, that is a common sort of category of those who are targeted. Those who would bully will target somebody, like you mentioned, because they're different or because they're perceived to be different. They don't even, maybe they're exactly the same. Or potentially they're a threat to the other person's social status. Or, maybe there's we look at a lot of times in our research, we'll look at some of the characteristics of those who are doing the bullying, and they've got a lot of potentially really rough stuff going on in their lives too. And so they're using this as an outlet to try to, redirect attention away from them towards somebody else. Maybe they've got a bad home life. Maybe they're struggling at school. So I think the different forms of bullying, the reasons are varied and complicated. The other issue is, you see this sort of reason for standing up and the bystanders who finally take action. And a lot of times this is initiated by the teen who, again, would love to do something and wants to do something, but they see this vulnerable or potentially vulnerable victim and they've sort of had enough. And so it's one thing when we talk to teens that they say, it's one thing if, my classmate who, is just like me is bullied and I think they can handle it. But as soon as they're targeting somebody who clearly cannot deal with it, has no capability of dealing with it because of, some difference, then they really felt obligated to step in. And what we're really trying to do is encourage them to take that to the next level and respond on behalf of the common student and every student in making, cruelty go away and promoting positivity.
Yeah. Well, let's go to kindness. I can't remember where it was, but I think it was the quarterback of the football team who came to the defense of a young student, a sophomore in a high school somewhere, who had had a brain disorder and was functioning at a third grade level and was being bullied. And lo and behold, what did that quarterback do?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing just even the power of standing by, the power of bringing these people into the fold. So in that case, you know, sort of just stood up and said, look, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. And you know, this particular student is going to, you know, help us on the football team and, you know, be kind of an honorary member of the team. And you know, if you're going to cross this student, then you're going to cross the whole team because, you know, we stand with this particular student. And you see many examples of that. That's what really inspired us to write this book is there's so much focus on the negativity. And we've written a lot about the negativity over the last decade. But there's so much positivity, too. We see these amazing examples of teens stepping up and doing great and wonderful things in their communities. And we thought, you know, more emphasis should be placed on that. And that's just one example of many that we highlight in the book. And there were dozens of others that wouldn't fit in the book. And so I definitely encourage listeners to explore all the positive things that teens are doing in their communities. It's just amazing and wonderful.
So this is a growing movement, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the thing that really got us sparked our interest in this was what's been called the Nice It Forward movement. And this was started by another football player in Minnesota. His name is Kevin Kerwick. And you know, he was tired of seeing all the negativity on Twitter and just hurtful comments. And so he started a Twitter feed that just focused on niceness and kindness. And it's a very simple concept. All he does is, you know, say nice things, genuinely nice things about his classmates and the staff and others in his community and pointing out their, you know, positive aspects of what they're doing. And it just caught on. And so there are literally dozens of these kinds of Twitter feeds throughout the United States that are completely run, managed, operated by teens, by students themselves. And I think it's great.
And I think it's wonderful that's happening. It's not perceived as a corny thing to do. It's embraced.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. I think, you know, there's a risk in doing that kind of activity, you know, under false pretenses or, you know, making it corny. But, you know, I follow a lot of these different feeds on my, you know, Twitter profile. And it's great. What they're saying is genuine. It's honest. And I think, you know, teens are very perceptive. And it's hard to pull the wool over their eyes. It's hard to be disingenuous. And, you know, if you're saying something and you're sort of the intent is bad, they'll see right through that. So if your intention is good and you're highlighting something that is genuinely good about another person, I think they'll definitely welcome that in the majority. Of course, there are, you know, those who won't, but the majority, I think, really value that perspective.
Gene in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have another perspective on this. It's been my experience as a teacher in Milwaukee to know that there has been at least one adult in a home who has promoted this bullying, whether they know it or not, because students really see and hear what's around in their environment and go out and do it because they don't know any other way to do it. So they think it's okay. And that's one thing. And the other thing is, as an administrator, one should do what you need to do in the school and not cop out and just from the top down and make sure the anti-bullying is happening in the school.
That's definitely true, and I think we've made some headway on that. You know, over the decade we've been studying these issues, I think most schools and most administrators within the schools now understand their role in dealing with all forms of bullying, including those forms that are occurring online. I mean, initially the response was, well, if it doesn't happen at school, it's not my responsibility nor my authority. And, you know, we know that's not true. Anything that happens, whether it happens at school or away from school, online, is the realm of the school to the extent that what's happening affects what's going on at school, right? And so if I'm being cyberbullied by a classmate every night, then clearly my ability to learn at school is being disrupted. And
sure.
So schools can get involved. And again, most, I think, under those circumstances would. The other issue about kind of the, you know, the issues going on in the home, you know, we talked about that a little bit earlier, and it does sort of reaffirm that the importance of parents doing the right thing and modeling appropriate behavior and making sure that you know, when their child sees them interacting with others, even others they disagree with, that they're doing so with respect. And the problem is, you know, like a police officer, who, you know, oftentimes school administrators are forced to deal with that, you know, that 5% or that 2% of the students and the families who really aren't cooperative. And so they definitely see a different perspective. And, you know, I definitely appreciate their ability to handle those kinds of situations in the best possible light. But what I'm encouraging is the majority, the vast majority, to step up and do something before it gets to the point where there's any significant harm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gene, so much for your call. Carrie on email writes of the I Can Help negativity campaign on social media. A group of committed students and adults working to significantly reduce negativity. Whenever you see any negativity on social media, don't just scroll past it. Comment with something positive or inspirational and tag it, she says, with hashtag I Can Help.
Another great example, and they're popping up everywhere, where people want to do something and they want to step up and they want to be a part of the solution to this problem. And so that's another great example.
More phone calls momentarily. We're speaking this hour with the co-author of Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral. Professor Justin Patchen is a professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire, presented at the White House, appeared on CNN, NPR, New York Times, discussing issues relating to teens and technology, and he's been studying teen use and misuse of technology for a number of years. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're interested in hearing from you. Maybe you've been a victim of cyberbullying, or somebody in your family or child, grandchild has been a victim and you found out about it. How have you handled this? What kinds of information do teens need to have in order to counter bullying? What are the strategies to be used if you are being bullied? And if you are a bystander and would like to become involved in stopping this kind of bullying, what can you do? And how can you help spread kindness? More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655. Our number, Christian, who's driving somewhere, is with us now. Hi, Christian.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just had a quick question for the author. I agree with 100% of what he says and kill people with kindness. However, there isn't a kind of a sense of accountability anymore because people can do these things rather anonymously, whereas when I was growing up, there was always kind of that fear of, you know, going out to the playground and, you know, kind of selling up and the potential for getting whooped on. I was just kind of wondering what the author thought about that, and I'll take my question offline.
Well, that's a good point, Christian. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think you're right. You know, enough has been written, a lot has been written, including by us, about kind of trying to, you know, deter students from engaging in these behaviors in the first place. What we know is that threatening teens, especially with sort of legal action, isn't likely to stop those who would bully from bullying. So, you know, passing stiffer penalties, stiffer laws, isn't likely to stop them. They're not going to stop and think, well, you know, I might be arrested or I might get fined, so I better not bully this person. But the social influences are very important. And so maybe it's not so much that it's accountability in terms of, you know, a penalty from the law or even a physical response from the person you're targeting, but it could just be that relational response that's important. So, for example, if I know that my friends would be disappointed in me if I, you know, harassed somebody or mistreated somebody, and I value my relationship with my friends, then I'm not going to do it. And so it's important for teens who stand up against these kinds of behaviors to make it very clear to the people they're associating with that, you know, I would never do this, and you know, I certainly don't appreciate it if others would do it. And sort of as a group, collectively, you affirm this idea that, you know, treating others with respect is the right way to do it, and you know, cyberbullying others is wrong. And so, you know, Christian is right to the extent that maybe there isn't necessarily that immediate physical accountability like there might have been 30 years ago when you're saying something mean on the, know, in the schoolyard. But ultimately, it can get back to the person, and it could result in accountability one way or another.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the call. Tracy in Caledonia, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question kind of goes to that, too, about the past. People seem to be very romanticized about maybe bullying in the past compared to now, saying, oh, people are soft and weak. And we need to go back to the time when people pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and they were tougher. But they seem to forget that, you know, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, a lot of people were shut away. They were put away. They were taken out of the light in society and kind of hidden away, you know, disabled people and put away in hospitals or, you know, people in the street hid away. And even today in popular media, no matter how you become famous, you know, you're respected and looked good upon until maybe that collapses on you and you fall off that pedestal and now you're on your own. You're a terrible, awful person who never deserved that light shown on you.
Yeah, I think Tracy, I think you're right to the extent that you've got certain groups of people that like to look at the past, or at least their experiences growing up, as being significantly better or significantly worse, depending on who you're talking to and about what the question is, right? And so, well, in my day, you know, bullying was so much worse because it happened on the playground and I was physically hurt. Well, how do you know that? Because you're not living in today's society with today's sort of expectations and obligations. And we have to look at it, I think, from the perspective of the person who's experiencing it right now. And you know, I'm not going to delegitimize the concerns or experiences of teens today at the expense of my experiences as a teen. And I think it's just important to affirm that, especially when a teen turns to an adult with an experience that they're having, whether it's bullying at school or bullying online, if it gets to the point where a young person is confronting or confiding in an adult, then it's a significant concern for them. And so we need to try our best to understand how it's affecting them and what we can do as adults who care about kids to get the situation resolved.
I want to spend a little more time on the person who has been the victim of bullying. Do those people usually come forward, or is there this sort of silent pain and very deep pain sometimes that goes along with this kind of bullying?
Yeah, you're right, Kathleen. It often is very silent. And the first, especially with, even more so, it seems, with cyberbullying than traditional face-to-face bullying. But, you know, the first study Samir Hinduja and I ever did, 10 years ago, we found that less than 15% of those who were targeted with cyberbullying told an adult about their experience.
Oh, my.
So about 10% told a parent, about 5% told somebody, an adult at school. Those numbers have gotten a little better, but they're still pretty low. You know, usually it's about 25, 30, maybe 35% are telling adults. Usually the younger ages are more likely to tell than the older ages. Because, look, if you're 16 or 17 and somebody's saying mean things about you online, it's definitely not, you know, popular to admit that it's bothering you. And so you just sort of suffer to the point where maybe you crack or you really get desperate for help. And, again, it shouldn't come to that point. And that's why it's important for all adults who have kids or who work with kids to express to them that you know, bullying in any form is something that we want to stop, and we'll do anything possible to get that situation resolved.
Let's go next to Tracy. Thanks for your call. Jeff in Neenah. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
As a parent of 15-year-old twin daughters, I'm very plugged into their social networks. I'm also fortunate enough to be an IT consultant, so I'm familiar with the technology.
Oh.
I'm wondering what sort of specifics, though, because there were always, in the traditional sense, when I was growing up, when you were bullied, there were kind of, as a parent, my parents, I felt, you know, knew what was, how they should act in these, in retaliation and to defend your kid. Do you address that at all in your book? Like, I mean, most of the time now, parents, we're always playing catch-up on the technology side. We don't even know about Twitter and Snapchat and Instagram. Do you have recommendations about how you deal with this to try to stand up for your kid if your kid is a victim?
Yeah, Jeff, that's a great question. It's a challenge. And I think the number one goal for a parent is to convey to their kids that they support them. They stand with them. And they're there to help them deal with that, anything they're dealing with it. And oftentimes when a parent is confronted with a, you know, a bullying or cyberbullying situation, they do feel helpless. They do wonder what to do, and especially when it involves technology, because as you mentioned, they oftentimes don't understand the lexicon or the types of environments. So, you know, I think, so keep that open line of communication with your kids and find out what's going on and ask them, you know, how they see the particular situation being resolved. A lot of parents want to, you know, maybe go rush over and contact the parent of the one doing the bullying, and that can be pretty risky. You know, I've talked to a lot of parents who say, well, I would just go over there and talk with the parent and we'd work it out. Well, if you know the parent, if you've got a good relationship with the other parent, then maybe that would work. But the problem is the other parent's going to immediately become defensive, and it's not likely to stop the behavior unless the other parent is a really good parent, and the behaviors might not have happened in the first place if they were a really good parent. I think it's important to involve the school relatively early on, to let, so as a parent, contact a counselor at the school, especially if you know that the person doing the bullying is a student at your daughter's school. Just so they can monitor the situation and make sure it's not happening at school, and you know that they know the context of any potentially inappropriate behaviors that are happening there. But you're an advocate for your child, and you want to help them be successful at school. The number one thing, I mean, the whole goal of a student, of a teen who's being bullied, is to get that bullying to stop. And so whatever you can do as a parent to help them, whether it's contacting somebody at the school, whether it's giving them tools that they can use. You know, you talked about your experience with IT, so you can talk about maybe filtering and blocking and setting up a new profile and setting your profile to private and doing all sorts of sort of technical fixes. And if those don't work, you got to take it to the next level and keep getting help from others, again, at the school or beyond if necessary.
Thanks, Jeff, so much for the call. Debbie Menominee, hello.
Yes, I'd like to speak to kindness. And as an adult, I think we need to set the example. But showing our young people the high, I call it, that you receive when you're actually building someone up and helping them use a talent that they didn't realize they have and becoming successful actually is a much greater high than bringing them down by bullying them. I always tried to teach my children to think about what they were doing and treat people the way they wanted to be treated themselves. Were they perfect? I'm sure not. But I just think that if young people realized what a great feeling it is when you help someone achieve something or build their own self-esteem, it's much, much better than tearing someone down.
I agree, Debbie.
It's great. I mean, we need to, as adults, we need to model appropriate, caring, kind behavior. We need to allow opportunities for our kids to demonstrate kindness towards others, you know, put them in situations where they can see us doing it and where they have the opportunity to do it, because you're exactly right. It feels good mm-hmm. to treat others really great, or to help somebody, to bring somebody else up. You're absolutely right. All these teens that we talked to who, you know, started these pretty simple, you know, social media pages or did something in their mind that wasn't really that monumental, they just felt they did it, and it felt really great to help somebody out. So, Debbie, you're exactly right.
Thank you so much, Debbie, for the call. You have a website, too, don't you?
We do. We've got several websites.
Do you?
You know, we've got wordswound.org,
wordswound.org,
which is sort of our place to talk about all of the information that we're gathering through you know, the research of developing kindness and deleting cyberbullying. And it's really our platform, especially for teens. Our primary website is cyberbullying.us, and that's a place where we have a lot of our research findings, you know, fact sheets for parents. We've got information for teens as well there, but educators. And so if you're interested in cyberbullying, cyberbullying.us or wordswound.org, and we have, of course, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the different environments as well.
Thank you so much. You must feel good having written something that's an important book for people. It's important to do this kind of work.
We really enjoyed writing this book, and we enjoyed writing all of our books, but this one especially because we could spend time talking with teens that were doing great things. So Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you. Justin Patchen, professor of criminal justice at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. The book is Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and to KP as well for on-air production. We end this show with a little quote from Kurt Vonnegut, who talks about kindness frequently. God bless you, Mr. Rosewater. Part of a baptismal speech the protagonist planning for the neighbor's twins. Hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. It's round and wet and crowded. At the outside, babies, you've got about 100 years here. There's only one rule I know of. You've got to be kind.